The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Taking Stock on Friday, the 11th of August, 2023. And Cashmere John's here. You're right, John.
Not too bad.
What are you going with today? Sort of shirt, t-shirt combo. Aren't you warm? It's quite warm, isn't it?
Not in this room.
Isn't it? Well, yeah, that's because your flat there has got no window. It's just overlooking London. It's quite breezy.
I guess sun on the back on this part of the house. Anyway, we won't get into that.
Looking around today, it's one of those days, isn't it? A tumbleweed day, pretty much, where there's no news. It's like you're looking around, as someone did comment on Twitter, said, you know, when you've got a change of address being one of the most read news items on the list, there's very lack of news about, but we'll go with what we've got.
And, it's thin on the ground.
It is. It's summer, and like I said, you know, the market sort of shuts down a little bit. People still sort of go away on holidays and stuff, and it doesn't really kick back in until September. Mm. But we'll go with what we got. By all means, hit that subscribe button, because we may be changing times. Who knows? But if you hit that subscribe button, then you will get notified when we go live. And please do comment below. We have a comment, actually, from Phil. Was a regular commentator, and he did say, and I don't get bogged down in it, but it is a good point. We all talk about buying stocks, you know, at the right level and what to buy, but we very often don't talk about when to sell a stock, you know. So I would like your opinion on that, and any thoughts on that. I know trading, different kind of thing, people generally look at the exit before their entry, and they realize, okay, if it goes wrong, what am I going to do? And so as investors, we often don't do that, do we? We almost just think it's going to go right anyway. And then we don't accept it's going to go wrong. And when it starts to go wrong, we think, uh-oh, I've gone too big in this or whatever. So it's almost worth looking at that. You know, what's your exit before you enter, you know? Do you have any plans on that, John, or just hope it goes in the right direction?
Generally speaking, you know, I'm a buy and hold, you know, long-only investor. So, you know, the exit would come when I feel that there's no more value to be created for a particular company, you know, that it's reached at the peak of valuation. There's no more catalyst for further improvement. But, you know, I don't think I'm seeing that with much that I hold at the moment. You know, I would be inclined, if, you know, if you'd had a sort of racy return on a sort of growth stock to bank some profits.
Cover
the cost of that stake, so you don't end up in a situation where, you know, you're giving your gains away. As I mentioned the other day, the one thing I did sell was Somero, mate, because I got that wrong. You know, I looked at the price and thought it was cheap, but underestimated the cyclicality to which it was exposed.
And I
really didn't see much in the way of a catalyst, you know, either sort of economically or otherwise for that to start performing again. And it has really struggled. So you know, I sold that at a loss, and actually it was the right thing to do because it kept the losses to a minimum. The one I've been looking at, and it relates to another comment, say BT, I actually initially did really well on this, but it's reversed and gone very much the other way. You know, there was hope of, you know, sort of activist involvement and you know, that it really has the infrastructure to dominate this market. There was an expectation that it would sell its content division. Instead, it put that into a JV. So, you know, lots of things have gone wrong here. And I'm thinking, should I crystallize that loss? But there has been a change of management, so I'm, you know, sort of happy to sit on it for a bit longer. It's in the doldrums, but cheap as chips.
Look at that. I mean, it's from like £5 a share back in 2015. I've had a mess around with that in the past, but and it's down at 115. The thing is, it's almost like that. When like my take on it is because I've spent ages. I do love investing, and I try and figure out every part of it. I try and figure out a solution for everything. And one of the things I'm trying to figure out recently, especially in the bear market, is, you know, if it goes wrong, what happens? Because we often, you know, we always look at the reward. There's risk and reward for every investment, and we always look at the reward. We tend to ignore the risk. But I think if you focus on the risk first, and then try and cover that off, because you're investing in a company essentially because you see upside. There's risk, there's reward there anyway, but don't ignore the risk. Deal with that first and think, okay, if this goes wrong, how much of a hit am I going to take on this When am I going to admit to being wrong? For Samira, for example, when did you admit you were wrong? Was it a certain percentage down, or was it just a fundamental news, or at what
just
point?
Just the news flow. It was just completely uninspiring. And
yeah,
I mean, okay, honestly, yeah. And I, you know, that's not necessarily criticism, but you know, I wasn't seeing any signs of a trading catalyst there. In fact, yeah. I was seeing the opposite. Yeah. So I just thought, you know, this is going to get worse before it gets better, and that's been the case. You know, BT, you know, got that wrong as well. But you know, it's a key, you know, strategic part of the UK's infrastructure, and the shares are trading at, you know, almost, you know, forecast P/E is six times earnings. And you think, you know, how much worse can it possibly get? So I haven't sold it. You know, it's not gonna, I mean, even if it does get a little bit worse, it's not gonna get fundamentally worse from here. I'm only down about, well, it's 30%. There's a dividend to come as well, which is sort of, you know, kept the portfolio losses, you know, much more palatable than they otherwise would be. So I mean, it's not a disaster, but why sell at this point?
Yeah, well, do you know what, someone asked me that, but in fact, I hope they don't mind, but Plarium yesterday, so should I just sell Plarium? I said, well, listen, you know, I think the person was down quite a bit. So if they don't take up that much, and you've already taken the big loss anyway, if they don't take up that much of your portfolio, then why sell? Because Plarium have very good technology and they could commercialize it. And I think the only thing that will make you more annoyed now is selling it and it rising. You know, so that's really annoying. But I would say, on a mathematical point of view, if you buy using fundamental research, look at the chart and it's looking like going the right direction and it goes against you, then fundamentally, you know, that old, if a company drops by 50%, you need 100%. To get back to where you were, break even. So the figures work against you. So I think if you want to put a stop loss in at 20%, do it. Or start off small. That's what I tend to do, is start off now small. And if it goes against me, but I still like the story and the story hasn't changed, you know, fundamentally, it's okay. It's not going to affect my portfolio. I don't. When you go big, you get really emotional about it and you mess up a lot then. But start off small or put a stop loss in or something like that. But
yeah,
I think look at the risk first, you know.
Stop loss is a subject for debate.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Should you
put like
hard stops in? You know, auto stops that knock you out of position when it hits a certain level.
It's hard with microcaps as well because they can be volatile. You get stopped out, they can rebound. So
exactly,
I tend to go with portfolio exposure rather than stop losses. I limit my exposure to it, and then it starts to go in the right direction. I can always average up. You know, if it's knocking the ball of the park and they've come up with some cracking updates, I can average up. But
what is useful is soft stops. So you know, just price alerts that, you know, if you hit that certain drawdown, then at least you're not, you know, sort of blissfully unaware that your shares are crashing. You know, the other thing I would say about, you know, when you should sell is, you know, if the story has changed, you know, if the company has said it's going to do X and it ends up doing Y, you know, it's not delivering, or the backdrop's changed, or the market's changed, then that's the time to consider a position. I mean, just going back to BT, you know, this is the other thing. I mean, I'm looking at the board, new chief exec coming in. But you've also got the guy there, the chairman, Adam Crozier. You know, this guy's a turnaround specialist. You know,
yeah,
done it a few times before. So yeah,
management.
You know, faith in management is also something to look out for when making that decision.
Yeah. And one of the things is that there's two scenarios, isn't there? Essentially, when you go into a trade, and when to sort of sell a stock. First of all, it's going completely wrong. Then you have to know when to sell, or if it goes completely right, and you can be overexposed. That's not a bad problem to have. But it keeps rising, and it's a big part of your portfolio. But again, I you know, if you get to the point where you're having sleepless nights about it falling back because you have such a big position, then just top slice a bit, you know,
top
and
slice.
Reduce your risk with it. A couple comments there. Old Dog 71 says, "Wing it." That's what he does. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not in favour of putting a massive, you know, rigid plan in there, but sometimes having a little bit of a plan, thinking if this goes down more than 20%, I'm out because it's going to carry on. It's hard to get back. Small stocks can rally that in a day easy. But I mean, bigger stocks, you start going down by 50% and you're in trouble a little bit because it's going to take 100% to get back up there.
I'm not averse to a bit of winging it from time to time.
Yeah, exactly.
You remember that quote that came up the other day? You know, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face. You know.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, do you know what? Some of my best investments, I literally have researched for like 5-10 minutes, really understood it, and then gone in and then did some more research. You know, but so, companies I'm all of a sudden too long on researching haven't done so well. You know, so Alan Jones for AIM stocks, especially those that have a large holding, sell down when sentiment changes. It saved me a fortune over the years. But how do you measure sentiment? You talk about the chart, or you just put your finger, you know, have you got the sense of psyche, how does it manifest itself? Sentiment. Do you mean the chart wise, momentum? I don't know what you mean by that. Tell us, Alan.
Technical indicators can help.
Technical indicators
can help with selling. You know, there's, I can't remember what it was. I think it might be 30-day moving average that can be a good selling signal.
Yeah, I like 50. It depends on what time frame you have. Someone did say, talk about funds here, and someone says, LNG Global Technology Index, great fund, low cost and performing well since the start of the year. And then Phil came back in saying, careful on that one. It's 20% allocated to Apple, which in my opinion is overpriced right now. 20% Apple, 70% Microsoft, Nvidia, Google. Of course, done very well recently. Yeah, in fact, the thing is, funds like that, you know, who are leveraged towards those big caps, they've done really well recently. But it's a little bit of a worry if they start to roll over, isn't it? Because they take up such a big percentage of the S&P now. But,
absolutely. I mean, you know, why also buy a dedicated tech trust when you could just buy a very, 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 very cheap tracker? Given how much those tech companies dominate that market.
Okay, let's go to the front page of Vox here. Fueling the future, 5 companies leading the energy transition with green hydrogen. So this is from Lauren there. And what are these companies? Is it a secret?
No.
Atome. Oh, okay. Are you into hydrogen?
So basically, hydrogen is... it's one of those sort of future fuels that has been, you know, caused lots of excitement. Then it sort of died away a bit, and now it's coming back again. And the thing that, you know, the holy grail of hydrogen is green hydrogen. So essentially, you know, making this fuel without emitting any carbon. Which is what grey hydrogen does. You make grey hydrogen from hydrocarbons. So these are all companies that in one way or another are producing green hydrogen. And, you know, there's some real commercial progress in here. I was particularly interested in AFC, who are doing, you know, lots of interesting work with sort of plant hire. They've developed these, you know, hydrogen power generators, and they've got a JV with Speedy Hire, the equipment hire group, to launch a dedicated hydrogen generator business. So yeah, it's becoming a reality. I've said before, I do think that, you know, after look at that tech hype curve, you know, we got overexcited and we came back, and then, you know, there's sort of disillusion. Yeah. But I think we may be sort of on the way up to where hydrogen fits in, you know, pragmatically into a future energy system. I think hydrogen is has been written off, and we could see some life coming back into this little subsector.
Yeah, do you know what? I call it the chart. I would say we're coming into a bit too early. But I would see this previous support here where it's bounced off that and it broke down beyond that. And I was trying to get it back up to that. So that is now resistance. So I would say it needs to get above this sort of level here. I do hold, I mean, by the way, Atome, who I spoke to a while back, that's very interesting. Worth looking at those because they've got a board and connections that are very experienced and deep pockets on that. So Atome is a smaller company, but they're doing, let's go back to that.
Interesting stuff. And they're doing it in, you know, as I've mentioned before, jurisdictions where, you know, you wouldn't expect necessarily this kind of progress to be happening. It's Paraguay is where they've got a lot of big
green
projects.
Green ammonia. So they're producing fertilizer, that's the product, but they're using, you know, green ammonia to do that and a green way to do it. But I mean, worth checking out the board and the connections. Just read the last few RNSs there. So there's some very experienced people with deep pockets on the side of that company. And by the way, I do hold ITM. I don't know why. I just bought it. And this is one of the ones I just bought because it's a big, big hope high potential stock. And also, it's one of the most, one of the most shorted companies. It's just short track. and it's worth looking at this, SureTracker. It's one of the most shorted companies around. And let's have a look. Top five. There we are. Kingfisher, ITM, Boohoo, Naked Wines, Hargreaves Lansdown, Keywood. So I think if there's shorts, and in fact, they did reduce a bit of short. Who would reduce? You've got the 8th of August, BlackRock reduced by a tiny little bit. But like I said, that has a massive hype around it. They've got some of the stupid, silly, small, minuscule revenues. Yeah. And like a 500 million market cap. But I did see... I think
a lot of that's going to be cash, isn't it? I mean, they're sitting on a ton of cash.
Yeah, they've got about 250 million cash from last one I looked at, I think. But I quite like this because they've broken it above this sort of... this previous support level here. Previous highs there. And they broke up. And now in this range, if they can break above that, it'd be quite nice, this range up here. But it's ridiculous. One of these stocks where you should not invest in. There's no profit in sight. There's hardly revenue in sight. But it's just the hype of it. Like I said, one of those companies that went from nothing to a £2 or 3 billion company based on basically the hype of green hydrogen, you know?
What else? Got some results next week, incidentally, ITM, 17th of
August. Oh, they?
Yeah,
yeah, they'll fall off on that then. Hydrogen Utopia is in there as well. HUI or Huey, AFC. Yeah, ITM's in there. And EcTech. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, no, cool. It's an interesting little subset to them. Yeah. Some really sort of projects that dovetail with the energy transition in there. So worth keeping an eye on. All of them have got horrible share prices.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that. It's going from 4.4. Almost a 10 bagger in a couple of sessions, in a couple of weeks, and it's come back off now. And that's what people are hanging on to pretty much, is that the revisit of that, hopefully, you know. What else on the front page of Johnny Boy? Charat.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, slim pickings this morning. Charat, yeah. Is a gold miner.
Yeah.
I know this from many years ago. We looked at its operation. A colleague of mine went out to visit their mine in the high mountains of Kyrgyzstan. Wow. Terrifying video footage of him driving up there on these mountain passes through the snow because the helicopters couldn't fly because the weather was too bad. Absolutely terrifying.
Wow.
Kyrgyzstan mine, they're still waiting to really go ahead with that. But there is production, another mine, the Kapan mine. I'm a bit lower this year. I mean, the thing we've said about miners... is, you know, why is the gold mining sector doing so badly when the gold price is doing so well? And, you know, you see it in the statement that the all-in cost of producing an ounce of gold is, you know, has risen very sharply this year. Mm. Partly due to an appreciation of the currency. I think it's Armenian. Is it the Armenian dram? Did I get that right? Where Charat operates. But partly just because costs are rising.
Yeah, look at that. I mean, it's amazing. Gold look peaked out three times, right? At just over 2000, pretty much. And it fails to break that. But you can see here, there's a higher low here coming in. So maybe it will break that 2000, but it hasn't done that. Since what, 2020? But it's it'd be interesting to see if it can break that 2000
not,
level.
But it's not trading at depressed levels, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. No. And, you know, you would expect at these levels, you know, that gold miners would be doing well. Their leverage plays on the gold price in the same way that, you know, an oil producer is a leverage play on the oil price. But as I say, those costs are rising.
That's the gold chart. So weekly gold chart is 1983, and it was down at $400 there. It's been the Bitcoin price a little bit there, and it's rallied strongly. It hit sort of 1900 in 2011. I think that came all the way back down. Great financial crash. Well, 2015. It didn't start to rally from... The great financial crash happened, come and went. Gold was still in the doldrums a bit and didn't start to rally till 2018 again.
Well, you've got dollar strength, obviously, is the converse of the gold price. You know, so strong dollar weak gold price. So you would have had...
Wasn't dollar weakening after the great financial crash because they were pumping money in?
And gold was rising. Maybe and gold was rising, and then you had a taper tantrum in 2013.
Very odd. Okay, that's gold. What else on the front page here? Let's have a look. QE. Of course, lots of flights going out.
Heathrow booming.
What's that with Heathrow?
Booming.
Is it?
Yeah, massive. I mean, it's, you know, getting back to pre-COVID levels. They've got through a lot of the problems that hit the sector, you know, last summer. Staff shortages, real capacity constraints, you know, horrendous queues at airports. They're getting people through the airports quicker now. you know, big, big demand this summer because the weather's been so absolutely terrible in this country. So people are sort of taking the, you know, opportunity to jet abroad at the last minute. It's really been good for the travel sector as a whole, although, as we've talked about before, you know, that doesn't necessarily always translate into good performances at an individual level.
You know what? It's a bit like stocks and shares, isn't it? Right? People are in July, right? People are hanging on there for a bit of a nice weather. They didn't get any nice weather, right? So they decided to book and go on holidays now in August. And now the weather's getting better. Just hold on. It'll get better. It's like holding a stock for a while. Alan says sentiment, he bases that on chart and volume, but it's pretty much. Old Dog says, I bought some Creole, and he did say he wings it. So he said, I bought some Creole medical shares back in March for 27 pence with the full intention of holding them for at least 5 years. I love that. You know, that kind of, when you plan things, they don't really work out. So in terms of holding them for 5 years, I do that myself. I'm laughing because I'm like, right, this is going to be a long-term hold. I literally, it dips down and I'm out. And right, this is definitely a long-term hold. Anyway, 5 years he's going to hold them for. Thought they'd be a 10-bagger. Then along came Destiny. I had no spare cash, so sold Creo at 34 pence, whacked it at Destiny, winged it slightly. Sometimes you have to do that.
Then.
You have to pivot a little bit. It's like with businesses, isn't it? If you are a startup business and something's not working, in fact, a good example of that is in lockdown, you saw a lot of companies pivot towards things, you know, for COVID, for tests, whatever, when they weren't doing that. And they started doing well. So sometimes you've got to pivot. If the plan isn't going to plan, you've got to evolve a little bit, especially with small caps, not so much with big caps, because they are mature businesses with lots of different revenue streams. But if a small cap is not working out, and you get a bit new business in, and then sometimes they have to pivot. But
That's you know, that's bold. That's bold. That's decisive. That's good. No messing around there.
That is a classic, though. So they're saying, I'm going to hold on to this for 10 years or 5 years. It's going to be a long-term hold. And then all of a sudden, right, I'm out in the next one.
It was the right choice, though.
So there's that sort of instinctive, intuitive element, isn't there, to investing. And sometimes people say, don't ignore your gut.
Never ignore your gut.
Especially when it's hungry. Right. So followed, in fact, a lot of people talked about Spectral yesterday after sort of a big heads up on that. We talked about it on the podcast about them going to NASDAQ for double the price. And in fact, it's still 49 pence. So the actual sort of like-for-like sort of takeover on the NASDAQ would be £1.01. If you didn't realize that, look at yesterday's sort of podcast. One of those red, Greatland Gold, and they seem to be exploring for a long time this Haverian project, and it's garnered a lot of hype. They had Newcrest come in, I think, for 70% to pay up $65 million in costs and all that stuff as they farmed in. And look at the chart, and and whenever they come out with anything, Greatland Gold, anybody news, it can literally be a change in address, registered office, and people will GGP, and people will read the RNS. But I did put a sort of a summary of what they're doing down there, but. As yet, they still seem to be looking, you know, exploring a bit, and they come up with a mineral resource estimate. But the chart there, you see why people like this or why people still hold on to this is because, you know, they literally did 2,359% from December 19 to December 20. In 1 year, 2,300%. So you can see why the hype is around this. Will the hype revisit? I don't know. I think the deal was, there's lots of rumours they're going to have a farm in from a bigger partner. And it did happen, you know? So I don't know where the hype's going to come from next time, because that kind of hype you can't replicate, can you? You know?
No. There's a lot of share prices that look like this. I mean...
Yeah. Well, that's an exception. That's one of the most followed because of that hype. In fact, do you know what we overlooked? Well, we didn't sort of overlook it. In fact, I talked with John Mayer. Ethereum. Now, they've had a similar kind of thing there. They have had Rio Tinto sort of overlooking their lithium assets, you know, and they are still. So when that happens, it's you know, worth paying attention to really small miners who have big companies coming in, because, you know, Rio Tinto, they don't just jump. They're not like a old dog there. They don't just wing it. They do due diligence, and they do have, you know, huge departments of people who look over sort of assets. So it's very interesting. They've just sort of they got a joint venture with Rio Tinto in Rwanda for the lithium assets. So that's maybe worth looking at. But it's very interesting when, you know, it's like anything, isn't it? When you're a small company and a big company does some kind of partnership with you, it's doing due diligence for you, really, you know, in some
lithium way. Lithium everywhere.
Yeah, it is. They can't. It's like anything. In fact, you know, companies on the stock market, especially on AIM, they pivot a lot, don't they? It's like there was a dot com happened, everyone started changing the dot com. Lithium starts going up, everyone's got a lithium asset.
We need it. I mean, that is the bottom line. Yeah. You know, again, it's a market. It's not in deficit at the moment, but it's forecast to be in deficit as demand takes off.
There's very little news. Investor presentations, Seattle update on share incentive scheme. That's number three. Whoa, is that it? So there's not a lot going on. But the risers, apart from there's no news on strategic, there's EMIS. What's happening with EMIS?
It's a takeover situation. EMIS sells essentially record-keeping systems, electronic record-keeping systems for primary health providers, doctors, surgeries, that sort of thing. So basically NHS tech, and they got a takeover offer, which you'll see that nice vertical line there on the left, which took it up to pretty much the takeover price. And then, of course, the price fell off a cliff when the CMA, Competition and Markets Authority, announced that it was going to investigate the transaction. Can't remember who the purchaser is. Is it McKesson?
Let's look. It's Nemis. I don't know. Acquisition update. CMA. In fact, that's a good binary play.
Can't remember
it?
Who when it is. United Health. Yeah. That's it.
Oh, that's right. When you get CMA involved in that, there's always a binary play there. So the CMA, if a CMA comes out, you know, there's nothing on the table. If a CMA comes out and says fine, then it just you have that kind of happening from 15. £19.
Yeah, so, do you know what? I mean, this was we did actually write a piece on companies that worked with the NHS to improve efficiencies, and we looked at EMIS very briefly. You know, this sort of I didn't feel there was much behind this investigation. Mm. So there was a little arbitrage there to be had on the basis that the outcome would be in EMIS's favour.
Yeah.
So that's why it's up. And it's a great company, but then there's lots of other opportunities still on the London market that are doing much the same thing with regards, supporting the NHS.
Yeah. I would say to you, if you're not a regular visitor to the front page of Vox, please do go. There's content, they're very good content. But also, these are worth following. These give you inside, almost indicators. When you get a company most followed there, the share price hasn't risen, you think, why is it being most followed? Do some research, or a day's riser. If it's not good news, read the news and think, okay, why is it rising? It's just no news.
It's curious, to see Majestic Corporation up there in the most followed companies because it's, it is really... quite interesting what Majestic does.
Micro caps for you. It's
small.
Position themselves for a micro cap rally, I suppose.
Yeah, it's quite small. It's Aquis traded listed. But what it does, for want of a better word, it's called urban mining, which is a sort of modern euphemism urban for mining. Recycling.
Oh, okay.
It basically takes scrap metal and pulls the metal out of it and sells it on. And, what it's doing is building up a big network of source material. Not too different to music, Magpie in a way, but for metal.
Yeah.
Recycles it. And they call it urban mining because, obviously, this is done in industrial estates rather than, big holes in the ground in Africa. And recycled material because... these looming deficits that I've mentioned in metals like copper and other metals, recycled material is increasingly the option to sort of plug some of those supply gaps. Recycling is massively important, and this is what Majestic does. Going back to the EV thing, I heard the other day after our program, I did a bit of reading that the car is one of the most perfectly recycled products on the planet. So when a car reaches the end of its life, there's not much left of it that doesn't get used.
Yeah, well, not in our car. If you look at some of the stuff that our kids throw in the back, they don't watch it. That is like toxic. That's awful.
Yeah.
By the way, someone said, have a look at Mark's Electrical. They've been on with Paul a couple of times, and they did a trading update recently, and it's a strong period of 4 months. I don't know why 4 months. Revenue, 30% up. That's very good, actually. because they are in white goods and all that.
It's not bad.
And they're driven by excellent customer service. What I like about this company, I said to Paul a couple of times, is that their founder is still there. And so literally, you know, the pride of him. And so many founder companies do very well because it's their reputation. You know, they built it and they got a passion for it. It's their baby. And like I said, they pride themselves on really great customer service. Unlike the, you know, probably their competitors, unlike national brands who are run by managers. And they literally, he wants to get it right all the time. So they're doing well.
I think it's a strange old market. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of capacity that was taken out of this market some years ago. You know, Comet went pop.
Yeah.
But then you've got, you know, sort of smaller chains like Euronics, which are struggling, and Hughes Electrical, struggling and sort of retrenching. So there is sort of space to grow into if you can get that right. And, you know, I mean, if you've ever tried to buy anything substantial off of Currys, then you know why customer service matters. What I would say, AO World is actually quite decent for a customer experience a pricing experience.
Okay, and their chart has been, well, do you know what? It's a very good time. You know, if doldrums are in and everyone's saying, oh, we're going to, you know, cost of living squeeze, no one's going to buy anything, white goods and all that stuff. That was almost the time to buy. And that, as you could have bought these for 55 pence. And like I said, they've doubled pretty much. AO World as well. Look at the chart of AO World. It's like, you know, I have to understand when sentiment is really hot down on a sector, that's the time to look at this. And I think that with IO XP Factory, really sentiment's really bad, but on the sector, look at XP Factory, that's the pick of the bunch. When you get sentiment so bad on a sector, there's some bargains to be had. And really, it's AO World there, you know, they're down at like 40 pence, 90 pence.
AO was a really good trade because they were getting out of some of the sort of underperforming businesses.
Yeah.
In Europe. So I agree. I mean, this is, you know, but whatever the economic news is telling you, sometimes, you know, the bearish sentiment is too much. So you know, AO is a really nice demonstration of that.
Although I did have some, yeah, exactly.
Also, the thing is, you know, if your fridge packs up,
yeah,
you don't not have a fridge.
You've got a fridge pack up. You know, in fact, you know what? There's something like Paul did say about the stats on that. He said basically, not people looking for new stuff, but replacing stuff.
Yeah.
Even that alone will make them do very well. Their customers, you know, natural product cycle, replaced all their stuff because they've broken or something. That's enough.
In a sense, it's, you know, it's almost non-discretionary. I once had my fridge packed up on Christmas Eve.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was.
What did you do then? Just go to the local garage and buy some Christmas dinner.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, some ready meals. But funny enough, it wasn't. It was Euronics. So they were like, Euronics is a funny business. It's a European business, but they sort of, I don't know if it's franchise, but it's like a supply network for like local electrical retailers. And they very, very kindly let me have the one in their shop and bought it around the same day. So that was
nice.
Customer service, like second to none, I would say.
Yeah.
I wonder if even Mark's Electrical could do that on Christmas Eve.
Someone did ask Rich, by the way, emailed me saying, can you have like a pool bag? And there's a recent news out, but I mean, pool bag and Marici, but pool bag is not news out. But you can see there, just on the chart, seems to have a nice little bit of support here. So if it breaks down below that, it may go down to this sort of level down here, previous support. But I mean, it's tended to rally or bounced off this level before.
Well, it bounces off good news. You know, and you know, this is really good news coming out of this company time and time again.
So
if that is support, that's great. And you know, the next update, which I'm certain will be positive, we'll see a bounce again.
Verici, that's, if you see the previous, it's broken down for previous support here.
They look very similar, don't they, those charts?
Yeah, but it's oversold, so unless they come up with bad news, well, I don't think they will come up with bad news, then it's going to go lower, but like I said, if you not cut when it broke down from that level, maybe hold. Okay, let's quickly go. There's not a lot of macro news around, but what I did find interesting, we were talking yesterday about AI. So have you seen that story on Rupert Murdoch, basically News Corp? His profits have slumped by 75%. So he hinted they're going down the AI route, which essentially means cutting staff and doing more for less. And this is going to happen to a lot of companies, I think. You know, AI will help their efficiency and margins. And in fact, if you look at productivity in the UK, maybe that's needed. But what is people? You're still going to have to people overlooking it, though.
You basically get AI drivers. You know, this is the whole you know, people who can drive the drive the technology. So the nature of the jobs changes. But this is the way the world has always worked. I mean, I still have question marks over the quality of the output of these things. You know, ChatGPT makes stuff up, definitely. You know, the language that they use, and I say this with, you know, from a journalistic purity point of view, is often hackneyed. You know, only goes back, or only, you know, there's a couple of years of data missing, you know, to bring the things really up to date. So yeah, I mean, I think if you're a news organization which is attempting to displace staff to save money with AI, then it might spectacularly backfire. Because people buy the Times or whatever it might be for quality.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I know what you mean.
My former employer, the Financial Times, has an outright ban on the use of AI in the newsroom for journalists. Yeah,
they're probably the best.
No, I think that's the right decision.
But remember, though, you get these generators. I mean, the people who feed them, you know, a prompt, as they're called, and the more information you get, the more accurate it becomes. So AI shouldn't be left on its own. There will always be, you know, it's a quality control there. So just talk about write. So I think you still have people writing articles, but almost like refining them or with AI models that are, you know, tailored to your organization. They're not, it's almost like a brand kind of thing.
It's the foothills of this technology, really. We'll see significant developments, and then we should worry. But I think it's a more telling state of play of the newspaper and advertising industry than it is of anything else.
GDP, a bit boring, but it's up unexpectedly due to nice weather. And car insurance, it's an all-time high. But I think I'm going to finish today's show on Steve, who said, in Cyprus at the moment, 4-hour daily wait until the market opens, fill time taking the cat to the vets for nutrient a day, but can't do that every day. No, you can't do that every day. You can't keep getting attacked cat into be neutered.
Send him over some of the My Health Check tests from Boots, and he can have some fun filling his morning with those.
Yeah, yeah. But also, he does question, we'll have to look this up. Any idea why trying to close down the Christopher Mills Oryx Fund? We don't know about that. Well, maybe look into that for Monday, John. Is it so?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I'll have a look. What I would say, you know, the investment trust world. And I don't think this is true of Oryx, but it's certainly true. You will see lots of mergers taking place in the investment trust space because a lot of trusts are subscale. So the cost of managing those trusts when relative to the amount of money they have under management is too high. So then your fees are too high and they're uncompetitive. So you will see trust mergers. You will see some closures. You'll see you see managers moving all the time, taking trusts somewhere else. But it's investment trusts are having a tough time. You know, the average discount on a UK on an investment trust is, I mean, it's at record levels. Because they're getting the double whammy of weak markets, weak and weak sentiment, which means that things trade below NAV. So
and redemptions, well, not investment trusts, but funds, by the way, redemptions from people selling. So yeah, double whammy, and that's why it's a good time to buy. That's why it's a good time to be, contrarian. Like I said, you know, these stocks out there at the moment getting hammered on sentiment. And you saw Marks Electrical and AO World, the time to buy those was when sentiment was down. So if you're looking at a long-term investment, good companies right now are being hammered. They are good to be nibbling away, I think, right now. Anyway, that's it for taking stock this week. Speak you next week. Have a nice weekend, John. Speak then.
Thanks, Jesus. See you later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.